unless you have somehow managed to just shield yourself from everything that's going on in the world around you, you know that transgenderism is a pretty big subject. It's a pretty big topic of discussion in our world right now. And so when we're talking about transgenderism, we're just simply talking about people who have a conflict between their actual gender and the gender they feel they are. Well, up until recently, in the medical world, that was just called gender identity disorder. Disorder, just implying that something is not right, something is out of order. That's more recently been changed to be called gender dysphoria, but gender identity disorder. Now, what did you say in the beginning? We need to recognize that this is not just something made up. It's not just the figment of somebody's imagination. There are people who are dealing with an actual disorder through, in many cases, no fault of their own. And this would just be looked at as any other abnormality that somebody might have, or a person born with some other developmental issue. This would just kind of go into that category. And so I just want you to recognize that up front, that mental disorders are incredibly serious things. And there are difficult situations, and when we come into those or encounter those, we need to be sensitive to that. But I also say up front, just to kind of put this out there, that if we can recognize that we're dealing with a mental disorder, if we're dealing with a problem that exists in the mind, guess what we need to work on fixing? We need to work on fixing the mind, not the rest of the physical parts. But that is what some are choosing to do. Some, having this disorder, are choosing to transition so that their anatomy matches their feelings. And what's scary is this is kind of being pushed on children now, even younger and younger, and they're being encouraged to go through some of this transition stuff. Despite the fact that statistically, given time, if a young person is dealing with this gender dysphoria, they will outgrow it. But that's another case. And so there's the transgenderism. There's non-binary, in which someone feels as if they just do not conform to either through traditional male or female. And with all of this comes maybe some things that you've heard, gender-inclusive language. Pronoun preferences, where a person doesn't want to be referred to as he or she, it's they or them, or there's a whole other world of pronouns out there. Some of them are new. Some of them are just made up. You just make up whatever pronoun you think fits you the best. But there's this gender-inclusive language with pronoun preferences. Mr. or Miss might just be replaced with MX. And we could go on and on talking about that. But you are probably aware that there's a push to remove any kind of gender distinction in our language. And that's a very real thing that's happening right now. And so as we move into thinking about this tonight, I want to say this up front. I'm going to talk about this from a biblical perspective. And I say that because there might be somebody listening to this, maybe here, or maybe they listen to it online or listen to it sometime later. And I'm saying this because I'm coming at this from a biblical perspective. If you don't have a biblical perspective, if you don't have certainty about the Bible, if maybe you don't even believe in God, I can just tell you up front, lots of stuff that I'm going to say tonight, it's going to be very unsatisfactory to you because we're thinking about this from two different places. And so if that is the case, I would like to have a conversation with you about God and about the Bible. And then we can move on to talking about other subjects. But I did want to just put that out there, that this is from a biblical standpoint. Let me share with you some statistics, not very many statistics, just enough to just kind of help you wrap your mind around what we're dealing with right now. Pew Research, this is from June of 2022, so likes a few months of being a year old. So fairly current, 1.6% of U.S. adults are transgender or non-binary. That is, that their gender differs from the sex that they were assigned at birth. So that's a pretty low number now. The highest age range is with people in the age group from 18 to 29 years old. 18 to 29-year-olds, that number is 5%. So 5% of people between the ages of 18 and 29-year-old are identifying as transgender or non-binary. But when you put all of us old people in there, and tonight if you are 30 or above, you're in the old people category, that's a very minuscule percentage. And so that brings it down to a total of 1.6%. So obviously, overall, that's a very small percentage of the population, but the number's growing. Just over the past few years, we've seen an increase in the number. People surveyed would say that they know someone now, transgender. That number has increased quite a bit. And I think it's just a given that these numbers are going to continue to grow. As a matter of fact, in the middle school class this morning, I didn't poll just for this particular reason, but it kind of came up. We were just talking about some world issues. And I just asked, and several kids in there, and I think almost all of them know something about transgenderism. They at least have heard of it. I think most of them probably know what it is. As a matter of fact, we had one young lady said, I've got a friend telling me that there are over 40 different genders. And I'll tell you, that bothers me for a couple of different reasons. For one, it tells me that what we're talking about tonight is not a hypothetical. The other thing that bothers me, and this didn't really hit me at the time, but as I was going through my afternoon, I kind of thought about that, and I thought, we've got middle school age kids right here, and that's what they're hearing. And I don't know, from my standpoint, that I've really done anything much to prepare them for that. Boy, that hurt. Feels like in some ways we've done a major disservice. I'm speaking from the standpoint of a preacher here. That feels like a pretty big disservice to our young people. That here they are, they're already hearing these things, they're already maybe having to answer these things at the very least. And so I wanted to share that this is not hypothetical. And it's one thing if all of us old people are having to try to deal with it. It is another thing when our kids are having to deal with that. So my apologies for not doing this sooner. Let's talk about how did we get here, though. And I want to tackle this from a couple of different perspectives. Biblically speaking, what's the explanation for people who are in positions like this? And I'm going to be very brief here because I'm going to spend more time on the cultural explanations. But biblically speaking, we can attribute this all the way back to Genesis chapter 3 in the fall. That's where sin comes into the world. And when sin came into the world, that changed everything. Now, you and I are not responsible for Adam and Eve's sin, but we definitely feel the consequences of it because we live in a world that is broken because of sin. As a matter of fact, one of the very specific consequences said there in Genesis chapter 3, to Eve, God says that your desire is going to be for your husband. And I will tell you, as husbands, when we read that, I know what we want that to mean. I know what we want that to say. We want that to be interpreted that our wives are going to have this strong physical desire for us. I got news for you. That's not what God said is going to happen. What God said is there's going to be a tension between the roles of man and woman. And so much of what you and I are seeing play out today is not anything new, but it is something that we could attribute all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. But brokenness is defines the world that we live in. It is a world that's corrupted by sin, a world that's dominated by sin. And the effects of that show up in all kinds of different ways. There are defects physically and mentally and to the world itself because of that. And there are all kinds of temptations that go along with that. And there are temptations, most of them appealing directly to our physical body. And some of them are heterosexual, some of them are homosexual, some of them might manifest itself in identity crisis. But here's what I want you to know about that. When we live in a world that is broken by corruption, that necessarily means that there's always going to be a tension between who we want to be or what we want versus what God wants. And that is not just true of someone dealing with transgender. It's not just someone dealing with this or this. It is true of every single person. Every person in this room has some tension because we live in a world that is broken. We have some tension between who we want or what we want versus what God says. All of us have feelings that are not in line with what God wants. None of us are unique in that situation. So I think very generically, Genesis chapter 3 would describe why we see some of this. Another thing that explains why we see what we do is Romans 1. We're not taking the time tonight to read it, but the latter part of Romans chapter 1, Paul basically says there that God has made Himself known, but people chose not to see God. As a matter of fact, they exchanged the truth of God for a lie. And they suppressed God. They just pushed God away. And Paul goes on there to say, well, this is what the world would look like if that happened. And it would say, God gave them up. God gave them up. God gave them up. And God gives up people to their own desires and to their own passions. But Paul is describing in Romans chapter 1 what a world looks like when it has rejected God. And guess what kind of world we live in today? We live in a Romans 1 world, very much where men have rejected God. And what Paul says there as he's labeling some of these things, it's essentially you lose all touch of reality. You lose all sense of reality. And of course, that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. And I don't want to be insensitive here, but when a man thinks that he can just somehow become a woman, that is losing touch with reality. But Paul says that is a result of a world who has rejected God. And again, that manifests itself in lots of different ways. We could go back into the Old Testament and we could find people who are burning babies. People who are taking babies, their children, and they're burning them and they're offering them to their gods. Do you think that explains that it's a world who's just out of touch with reality? And so what we're dealing with, again, is not new, but biblically speaking, we have some answers for why certain things look like they do. And so when a person suppresses God, when a nation suppresses God, I think we feel the effects of that all around us. And so that's all I really want to say. From Genesis to Romans, just between those two passages, I think we can understand why some of these things are happening. I want to focus, though, a little bit on why these things are happening from a cultural standpoint. And I'm not going to touch all of this, but I do want you to see it. Here's one thing that plays a part in the way that people think today, and that's evolution. Obviously, that is not new. But if you believe in Darwinian evolution, then there's a connection there, at least in the way that we think. According to evolution, there is no creator. We are just the result of this series or this process of evolution, an accidental process at that. Now, the majority of us, I think, believe in God. And we were created by God, and God created us with intent. He created us with purpose. He made us male and female, and He gave us very specific roles according to our gender. I think all of us believe that. But if you believe in evolution, not only does the physical body not have real purpose, but there's nothing to suggest that it needs to conform to anything in particular. Because you and I look to God, we say, well, this is what I need to conform to. But if there is no God, there is nothing to suggest that you need to conform to anything. And so maybe you see how something like evolution plays a part in the way that people think. The body is just a body, and it's nothing more than that. There's more. There's movements like feminist movements that have been happening for decades. Movements that have pushed for equality between the sexes. And some of that I'm on board with. I mean, if we're talking about erasing this idea that men are the dominant sex, I'm okay with that. I think we should say yes, that's not a thing. But there's been so much more that has gone on beyond that. And so it eventually what feminist movements have done is they have destroyed a healthy view of the relationship between men and women. The feminist movements have essentially erased very important gender distinctions, which means as a whole, we have lost all sense of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. And so if we have collectively lost all sense of what it means to be a man and a woman, then we don't need to be surprised when there's questions about gender and identity. We've lost all sense of the idea that men and women can have different roles yet still be equal. Now, what's interesting is there's some clashing now between hardcore old school feminists and people that are leading the transgender movement, because on one end you have these feminists, for years we've been trying to do away with men, and now here in the transgender movement we have men saying, watch this, I'll become a woman and then I'll beat you at everything that we do. Think about Leah Thomas. You've heard that name before? Collegiate athlete, swimmer, Ivy League school, biological male, decides I'm going to be a female. Guess what? My Leah Thomas now is competing collegiately, a male, but competing against women. And guess who's winning? Do you see how that's kind of now a slap in the face to some of the feminist movements there? And so there's more to say, but I just want you to see there are all kinds of movements that in some way or another contributing to what we're seeing. Postmodernism, Jim mentioned this morning. I mentioned it last week. But that really defines the culture of the day, where we can't be certain about anything. I mean, even biological makeup is not certain. There is no absolute truth. You remember this question that kind of became famous seemingly only about a year, maybe a couple of years ago? What is a woman? And there are all kinds of people who would say, can't answer that question. What a woman. The latest Supreme Court appointee was pressed about that. Maybe you saw that. And when she was asked, can you define a woman? Do you remember what she said? Well, I'm not a biologist, so I'm not in a position to do that. Do you see what's happening here? Now, here's someone who's been appointed to our highest courts. And her main role is to be able to take the law and to interpret the law and to know how to apply the law. And she says, I can't tell you, I'm not qualified to define what a woman is. That is a result of this postmodern thinking that we can't be certain about anything. And so the language is changing. Some of it is subtle, but I mentioned in the beginning, as a matter of fact, there was a quote. It said, a person has a feeling that they are different than the gender they were assigned at birth. Do you see even something in that language talking about this is what we were assigned at birth? It is almost as if the doctor who was there in the delivery has done some deep investigation and he's trying to determine, and now some people believe he can't even determine at the moment of birth what this gender is. But some will say, well, he just assigned that. Well, I will tell you, he didn't do any deep investigation. He just looked at the baby. And he looks at the anatomy and he says, he just makes an observation. That's all he's doing. He's making an observation. This is a male or this is a female. But the language now is, well, they were just assigned that, but they were wrongly assigned that. And so that's kind of what's going on in our language. Technology is another thing that's playing a huge part in this. I wasn't alive 100 years ago, but I think we can look back. I think, yeah, y'all knew that, didn't you? You weren't alive then either. But if you were alive back then and you were a man and you wanted to transition to a woman, what kind of options did you have? You could do some appearance changing. You might could let your hair grow out. Some of you could. Some of you are just out of luck. You could let your hair grow out and you could dress in a more effeminate way. Maybe you could alter the... You understand what I'm saying. But now we live in a world where there are very few limitations. There's hormone blockers and the ability. I talked earlier about how this is reaching children and there's delaying puberty, allowing them to maybe get a few more years under their belt so that they can decide before they actually start developing parts that they may not want. And then, of course, there are just sex change operations, and technology is advancing those. And what we're working on right now is the ability for a man to have a baby. And when that happens, if that gets made a possibility, you see then how technology just makes us think, well, if we can do that, it must be okay. But technology plays a part in that. Overreactions. You know, the moment in time in which we live affects or conditions the way that we think. And I think there's so much talk about gender identity crisis and gender dysphoria. I think there's so much talk about it that lots of parents now are kind of in tune with that. And they may, for instance, have a little girl. And they start noticing that this little girl doesn't like to play with Barbies and dolls. She likes to play with trucks and she likes to play in the mud. Or maybe it's a little boy and he doesn't want to play in the mud. He likes to play in the play kitchen. And so some are so in tune with what's going on and they're buying into this idea that there is no real certainty and maybe the doctor was wrong. And so they might make some assumptions. I would call it an overreaction. And so their child does something that doesn't seemingly conform to the gender that they supposedly are. And so now they think, well, this little girl must be a boy. And they start pushing them in that direction. But I think what we have forgotten sometimes is that we can't just take what a child says and go with it. And I don't mean that to be offensive to all you children out there, but I have children of my own and I know for a fact I'm not going along with everything that they have suggested. Maybe some of you have had children who, when they're real little, they like you a lot and they tell you, I'm not ever moving out. I want to live with mom and dad forever. I think maybe one of our children has said that at one time. And you know what I did not do? I did not start planning for a future that included me and Katie and one of those. It's not going to happen. Maybe the child, we had one say one time, they thought it would be a good idea if Katie's parents lived with us. Like we could just be all one big happy family. Because they love their grandparents. But you know what I did not do? I didn't take that any further up the ladder than right here. I love her parents. I don't want to live with them. And so I didn't start making any reasonable plans to see, can we do this? Because sometimes children just say things that's in line with the thinking of a child. And what I think will happen, if I'm not wrong about this, is my children are going to grow up, and especially when they get to be teenagers, and the last thing they're going to want to do is keep living with me forever. Some of you have already experienced that. They can't get out of the house fast enough. Do you see how the mind of a child just, it will just move on past some of those things? And that's what I want you to see. I think there's a lot of overreacting to something that a child might do when it's really not. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some children that actually don't suffer from gender dysphoria. I'm just saying if you have a child and they seem to do something that is non-conforming to their gender, don't push the panic button on that. Here's another thing that is contributing to this: social contagion. And all that means is that ideas, they're contagious just like a virus. Whether we're talking about corona or the flu or the cold, we pass those viruses around, we pass ideas around. And just like with the physical body, sometimes our immune systems get low. And you know what happens when your immune system gets low? You catch every little thing that comes by. And if you think about living in a Romans 1 kind of world, guess what we're going, guess where our immunity is socially? We don't have a social immune system. And you know that based on the things that are going on. I'll take abortion, for instance. When you live in a world where the majority of the people support killing innocent babies, you do not have a social immunity. And because we live in a world where that is true, then every little thing that comes along, even if it's immoral, even if it's outlandish, it catches on and it can get some legs under it. And I want to stop for a second. I want to say something just about social media. I know I say that a lot. And some of you might scoff when I do. And if you do, that's okay. But where do you think all of this is filtered through? Where do you think all of these ideas are being shared and gaining steam and gaining momentum? It's social media. And so we have to be careful because this is what's influencing all of us, especially our young people. There are other ideas. There's the you be you. That's a very American thing. You can be anything you want to be. I might tell my children that, say, hey, you're bright. You got a potential to do some good things. You can be anything that you put your mind to. But you know, when I say that to my children, I have some constraints in mind. But I think that mentality is so pervasive that some people latch onto it, and I can be anything I want to be, or I don't have to be anything that I did not choose to be. And then, of course, there's just the fact that there's acceptance. I've got a long quote here. I'm not going to read it all. But it just mentions that a person suffering from this identity crisis, social rejection is a common occurrence. And oftentimes, people are clinically depressed. They even sometimes take their own lives. They feel debilitating shame because they're very aware that they're different from other people or they're different from their peers. And so it is not unusual that they will kind of hide. And we can understand that. But what happens is they'll find someone who confirms or affirms their identity or loves them enough to accept them for who they are. And when that acceptance is filled, then more and more people start to identify openly. And now we're living in a time where it is socially acceptable to identify as transgender. And so, no-brainer, you kind of see that happening. I want to stop for a minute and just say something about these societal swings. Because if we can recognize what's happening, I think it is tremendously helpful for us to not latch on to things that come and go. And here's what I mean by these societal swings. If we could somehow just pull ourselves out of this moment in time, and we could kind of watch a timeline from a bird's eye view, this is what we would see happening in our society. It's just almost like a pendulum going back and forth from one extreme to another. We've gone from times where we thought we knew everything to times where now we can't know anything. And we've gone where feminists are fighting for women's rights to a movement now that says we don't even know what a woman is. Do you see what I mean by societal swings? And those are just a couple of them. But I think what these extreme swings tell us is that men are not getting this right. They're just not. Men keep trying to figure out, how can we make the world a better place? And some will say, well, we could make the world a better place if we did away with this, or we did away with this, or if we did this. And they have an idea, and the idea sounds good for a minute. But then as time goes on, flaws start to come, and then soon after we figure out, uh-oh, we've gone down a bad path here. We messed up. When we decided that we knew everything, they started seeing some flaws. Or we did this and now we start to see some flaws. It's the law of unintended consequences playing out over and over and over again. This looked like a good idea, but we didn't see this coming. And so guess what society does when they find themselves in that uh-oh moment, we've gone down a bad path? Well, naturally we have to go back the other direction. Do you think society ever just kind of goes back to the middle? It goes all the way to the other extreme. And that just plays out over and over and over again. And so if you don't get anything else out of what I say tonight, if you can just observe the ideas of mankind swinging from one extreme to another, let that be your sign that men are not getting it right. The world is not going to be a better place by erasing gender distinctions. The world is not going to be a better place if we give people more chances or more opportunities to change what their gender is. The world would just be a better place if people would look to God. And maybe that sounds cliche in a church building coming from a preacher, but I'm not wrong about this. Think about it. Instead of tearing down the distinctions between man and women, or man and woman, what if all men just decided to be men? And I don't mean macho men according to the world. I mean, what if every man just became a man according to God? And what if every woman just became what God wanted her to be as a woman? And what if every home, what if it looked like what God wants the home to look like? And what if every marriage looked like what God wanted it to look like? And what if our moral compass was God's moral compass? That would make the world a better place immediately. The sad reality is that the world can't see that. And you know the world can't see it because the world just keeps going back and forth, and they're not getting it right. History is not on man's side. It's one mess right after another. And so the postmodern world that we live in today, if we live long enough, guess what we're going to see? It's going to hit a wall and people are going to determine we've made a mistake. If we could just figure out how to quit listening to the world. And we can't count on the masses to do that, but if you can do that, if you and I can do that, we'll do well. All right, I'm going to fly through this quickly. I want to be respectful of your time. There are some biblical things to say about this. Genesis 1 tells us about creation and it tells us about male and female. And we could start there and just think about just the fact that that's what God created. But I think even beyond just that, verse 28 is not on your screen, but God then says, be fruitful and multiply. And I think when you put all of that together, what he's saying is male and female, but that really makes sense when you start thinking about reproducing, be fruitful and multiply. What he's saying is I've made males and females and their bodies are organized for that. And then Jesus reinforces all the way fast forward into Matthew 19. Jesus is still affirming what? They're still male and female and they need to be doing what? The same thing that God said in the beginning. Here's what I would say going back to that idea of a mental disorder though. Just because a person has certain feelings or behaves in a certain way does not mean that they are not still biologically a male or a female. Just because a mental disorder makes you think something, it doesn't mean that you are something. And so I think Scripture affirms this idea that there are just two genders. There's male and there's female. And thinking that I am something different does not mean that I actually am different than one of those two things. But Scripture goes on to do more than just talk about male and female. It talks about males and females in ways that God just expects we understand. Deuteronomy 22 verse 5. I guess if we wanted to talk about cross-dressing, this is the Bible verse we go to. Without even having to think about cross-dressing, just notice what he says. A woman shall not wear a man's clothing. What is God assuming? God is giving a command based on what? He's assuming that we have a knowledge of what women's clothing is or what men's clothing is. Do you see that? And so this is just very gender-affirming language all throughout the Bible. Gender norms, and God is assuming that we know something about that. Here's a verse in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Paul says, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men. And be strong. Guess what he's assuming? We know something about that. Now, you may have a translation that says, be brave there. But that kind of helps us see something, right? He's saying, well, you need to be brave. But when Paul was writing that, he attributed bravery to what? Men. That doesn't mean women can't be brave. But I think almost universally, what Paul is referring to here is that bravery is a masculine characteristic. I don't know what it's like in your home, but if we are in the bed and the house is quiet and the house is dark and there's a noise, who's getting up to go investigate that? In our house, it's me. And I need to be doing it quickly so that I can set her fears aside. And I would imagine that is almost universally true. If it's different than that, don't tell anybody, okay? But do you see, Paul in the Bible is talking about characteristics that are generally associated with the masculinity, with gender. And so, all throughout the Bible we have that. Here's maybe the most befuddling verse to husbands in the whole Bible, where Peter there says in 1 Peter chapter 3, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Okay. I find there's a context here where what he says makes sense, and we're not going to talk about all that tonight. But here's what I do want you to see. While Peter's not specifically saying why a man can't be a woman and a woman can't be a man, he does say something that helps us see that. Notice what he says there. Show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. But notice what he says just before that. You live with her in an understanding way as someone weaker since she is a woman. Did you need Peter to tell you, husbands, that your wife is a woman? I think we did need him to tell us that. It is not that she is just a female anatomy, but she is a woman, meaning what? She's not you. She's not a man. And so when I go to deal with my wife, what I have to understand is that I cannot deal with her the way that I want to be dealt with. I cannot deal with her the way that I might deal with you, Barry. I'm going to deal with you differently than I deal with my wife. And that's a good thing, right? So, we have to understand. But I think that's what Peter's saying. She's a woman. She is different all the way down to the core of her being, all the way down to the core of her existence. Her needs are different than yours. The way that you communicate with her, it's going to be different. Everything about her is differently. Different. And this is not just biblical stuff. Medically, this is known that men and women are not the same at all. All the way down to the cellular level, we are different. My physical heart, it's different than the heart of a woman. And my brain is different. And my muscular makeup, it is different than that of a woman. Every part of me, do you see how just because our mind makes us think that we are something, we're not actually that when you go all the way down to the very core. Well, that poses some real problems because the way my doctor is going to treat my heart problems or this problem is going to be way different. Medically, we still understand there are major differences between men and women. I'm going to let it just rest right there to move on. Ephesians 5 was read. Maybe that seemed like a little bit of an odd passage to read about transgenderism. It's talking about husbands and wives. But there's something there I wanted you to see. When God gave a command for husbands and wives, He gave two different commands, didn't He? Husbands are to love their wives. And wives are to respect their husbands. Why are there different commands there? And I think the commands are made in line with the greatest needs of a man and the greatest needs of a woman, they are different. 1 Thessalonians 2, if you want to write that down, you can look at it later. Paul says, when I was there, in some ways, we were as a nursing mother to you. We were very comforting to you. We were nurturing to you. And guess what? Paul just instinctively knew. That is a characteristic that belongs to women. Men, you don't believe that? Let one of your children get hurt. Who do they run to? It is not you. Why? Because instinctively there's something about a woman. He then goes on to say, we were also like a father. And he says some things that were more characteristic of men there. So all I want you to see when we start looking at the Scriptures is the idea that God created something other than male and female. That's not there. And the idea that I could go from one to the other, that's not there either, but that's what's happening. There's more we could say about the body itself, and time just doesn't permit to do that. But God says a lot about our physical bodies, which means when it comes to how I view something, how I feel can't always just take precedence. I also have to think about my physical body too. So I want to end thinking about a couple of things. What do we do? Because all of us, I mentioned in the beginning, this is not purely hypothetical. We already have young people who are going to be dealing with this and maybe have conversations, and older people, for us, it's just right around the corner if it's not already happening. We're going to probably find ourselves confronted with this in some capacity or another. And here's what I would say. I think we need to use this as an opportunity to just shine our lights. And we need to use this as an opportunity not to shame people who are already riddled with shame because they feel different or because they have some type of abnormality. We need to let them see that we're sensitive to what's going on with them, and we need to deal with this out of love completely. But love does not mean supporting what we believe to be wrong. There's something called pronoun hospitality. And I guess the question is are you going to participate in the preferred pronouns of a particular person? And I think that may be a question that if you're in the workforce, you're going to have to tackle that. Or be confronted with that at some point. As a matter of fact, I know someone who is in school administration, and that's already come up in the school where she is. Here's a student, and this student wants to be referred to as this, and it is not her biological gender. And I don't know how that's going to end. Her stand is, I'm not going to do that. And I think that's the stand that we all have to take. I'm not going to participate in the lie. I'm not going to participate in that lie, just like I'm not going to participate in any other lie. And so that might mean some unsavory things in the future for our corporate jobs, our teaching jobs, our preaching jobs. And if that happens, that's certainly not new to Christianity. I mean, if we go back and just read through the book of Revelation, it was, are you going to give in or are you going to stand with God? And in their time, in first century Christianity, it was, you bow down to Caesar or you renounce God or you die. Well, I don't think that's going to be our case. I don't think it's going to be death. I think it's going to be jobs. And I think it's going to be opportunities. I think that's what we're going to be confronted with. And here's what I would say about that. You and I need to be preparing today to suffer for righteousness. I'm afraid that's coming. We just need to prepare to suffer for righteousness. Hebrews 11 is a long chapter with lots of people who did great things even through adversity. In Hebrews chapter 12 starts out by pointing to Jesus who suffered all that He did, and then The Hebrews writer is encouraging the people of his day to keep going. I know this is hard. Keep going. I know you've already encountered lots of things, but keep going. Stay faithful. And he makes the statement, you haven't suffered unto death yet. That doesn't really make me feel all that good. But do you see what he's saying? For the sake of righteousness, if you haven't died yet, is that a little bit hard for us to wrap our minds around? But that's what it says. And Jesus would say, you're going to have to take up your cross. And I know typically today we don't live in a day of crosses and crucifixions. And so we interpret that to mean it's just going to be difficult. But I'm not certain that somewhere in what Jesus was saying is that it might actually mean a cross for you if you're going to follow me. And you and I think, have to prepare for that kind of suffering for the sake of righteousness. In time, I think our faith is going to be tested. And the question is, are you going to remain faithful to God and faithful to truth, even when that means some very unsavory consequences? One more thing and I'll be done. If there is somebody that happens to be listening to this that does not believe what I believe about gender and identity, And for the sake of you who may have to have a conversation about this sometime, here's what I would want someone on the other side of this to know. That me not being on board with transgenderism does not make me an immoral person. It doesn't mean that I have hatred. It doesn't mean that I don't want what's good for you in life. This all goes back to what I said in the very beginning. It's all about me believing in God. And I believe transgenderism is wrong for the same reason that I believe murder is wrong. And I believe murder is wrong because God says it is not okay for you to take the life of another person. And I'm not going to steal from you. You know why? Because stealing is wrong. And you know why I believe stealing is wrong? Because God said that. And I'm not going to leave my wife for another woman because God said you shouldn't do that. And if you're not married, you don't need to be having sex with people that you're not married to. Not because I have my own opinions about that or because I'm the judge of that, but because that's what God says. And if you want to divorce your husband or wife for some reason other than adultery, I'm going to say you can't do that, not because I'm the judge of that, but because God has said you can't do that. Do you see this? This is not about me passing judgment. This is not about my opinions. This is not about what I want to be right or what I agree with or disagree with. It has everything to do with God. I believe in God. And I'm going to be on God's side on everything. That's what I would want someone on the other side to know. If there is somebody struggling with it, transitioning's not the answer. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's this misconception that if I can just come out, that'll make me feel better. And guess what? That doesn't. And so they go a little further. If I could just do this, that would make me feel better. If I could start getting the hormone shots, that would make me feel better. I could have the surgery, that would make me feel better. And there are so many who have gone through that progression and they get to the end. And they've done all they can do. They've done the hormones, they've done the surgeries, and they're still lacking something. One person did say, when they were asked, this was a person that transitioned, then they detransitioned. And they said that when I was going through the transitioning phase, I don't think you could have said anything that would have changed my mind or stopped me. I was intent on doing what I wanted to do. You've been there before probably, right? But what they did say that helped them come back was that there were some people in their life that made them know you can always come back. And they said that was incredibly important. And so again, I beg of you to deal with this sensitively and to deal with this with kindness and compassion and to show people there is a better way. Thank you for listening. I've made you listen a lot longer than you should have to listen to me. So you're to be commended for that. There may be somebody here who's struggling with maybe what we're talking about tonight, but maybe you're struggling with something entirely different. I mentioned in the beginning, we all struggle. There's always some tension to go away from God and to do something that God would not want me to do. And maybe tonight you sit here guilty of that and you stand in need of forgiveness so that you can once again belong to God. We want to help you with that. Maybe you need to come to God for the first time, or maybe you need to come back to God. Maybe you're not ready to stand here right now tonight and make those changes, but maybe you want to talk about those changes. You can find me and I'll help you talk through some of those things too. But whatever we can do to help you get right with God, if that is tonight, we want to do that. Let's stand and sing.